Hello, welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. This is a space where searching, hurting, faithful, curious people come together and ask hard questions and listen to wise guests share how they have lived life deeply. There are a couple of things that you can do that really help out the show. One of them is if this episode is something that blesses you, can you please send it to a friend? Another thing is that if you really liked it, then could you please leave a 5-star review and write something nice? You can follow along at YouTube/Allison Sullivan for some really fun extras. Find me on Instagram at Allison M. Sully and TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. Thanks for being here. I hope you hear something today that lets you know you are loved and helps you love one another. Welcome to Sinner Saint Sister. I was walking with the dogs this morning, breathing in the changing of seasons with intention. It's always when the heat is either coming or going that my breathing is the deepest. The acorns were crunching under my feet when I realized in flashback I used to find them by the handfuls in my washing machine and dryer. My heart ached for whatever it is that makes a kid bring the outdoors in. Inquisitive investigation, wholesome meddling, delightful hoarding. I stopped and scooped up my own handful, placed them in my pocket for old time's sake, took another deep breath, and thought about Australian cattle farmers. Cattle farmers in Australia with thousands of acres could never dream of fencing in all their land to contain their herd. It simply wouldn't be possible. So instead, Australian cattle farmers, they dig really great watering holes. They know the cattle will return to them again and again and again. I read this somewhere, I can't remember now. The mornings, they're quieter than they used to be. Once the folders have been signed and the lunches have been packed, we scuttle to the van dragging backpacks and jackets. The hustle and bustle moves from home to school, and I stand in the kitchen alone, working to remember the days I was up all night with the baby, and then awakened, much earlier than necessary, by 3 heads at the side of the bed asking for Lucky Charms. If someone would have told me then that one day sooner than I'd think I'd have mornings to myself, with plenty of time to wipe the strawberry tops from the countertop and then take the dogs on a leisurely walk, before tending to the work that I love, I would have told them that this kind of teasing should be considered cruel and unusual punishment. And yet here I am, taking deep breaths, working to remember, with clean countertops and a pocket full of acorns. It was 15 years ago, the night before my C-section with my firstborn, I stole a moment by myself in a closet people could easily forget about. And I ugly cried like I had never ugly cried before. Behind a box fan we never needed in Minnesota, I crouched as skillfully as I could, 10 months pregnant. My mom, spending the night at our house for the delivery the next day, must have heard me. However, I think it's more likely that she sensed me. Whatever the case, the door slowly opened. She scanned the dark but couldn't find me. I held my breath and hoped to fly under the radar. "Are you afraid of the surgery, Allie?" she asked gently into a rack of coats we didn't wear. I sniffled and shook my head. "Babe," she said, still scanning for me, "are you afraid?" I struggled to my feet in the clutter, my clumsy body matching my wobbly emotions. I stepped into the light, looked at my mom, took in her concern for me, and then busted out bawling. Through hiccups, snot, I wept into her chest. "I'm afraid I'm not going to love the baby." "Oh, honey," she chuckled and hugged me, relieved. She tried not to all-out laugh, because to me it was no laughing matter, but she knew something I didn't. "Allison Sloan," she said, "you are about to come face to face with the greatest love you will ever know this side of heaven. In every other instance, love has likely been something gradual. You've fallen in love. Something decided upon. Controlled, contained. And I don't know if this makes you feel better or worse, hon, but this kind of love, it doesn't check with you first. There's nothing gradual about it, and there is no containing it. No falling necessary. Just wait. You'll see." The next day, I laid in my hospital bed with Silas Justin, froggy-legged, asleep on my chest. I ran my finger along the edges of his male-patterned baldness and traced the curl of his curvy top lip. My mom watched me from her vinyl chair in the corner. "Hey, Allie," she said, snapping me out of my trance. She smiled cheekily, and through fake sobs and hiccups, she gave her best impersonation. "I'm afraid I'm not going to love the baby." I chuckled at the absurdity of it now that he was here with fingernails and dimples. We now had the same information, my mom and I, Invisible lines connect every last one of us, but the strongest of all, they're to our children. Parenting, like writing, or maybe any great endeavor, has always felt a little like feeling my way through the dark. It's instinctual, but I have to be honest, so much of it is guesswork. A little desperate, sometimes frantic, all senses heightened, operating on hunches. Parenting for me, it's been pure conjecture. I've never felt like a pro. But I do know this. I know that I have never given myself to anything more than motherhood. My self-donation, it has been imperfect, for certain. It's been broken and flawed, but it has also been exhaustive and whole. I have given my motherhood all of me. My kids, for better or worse, have always had all of me. Silas had all of me when he butchered the game of soccer at 2. He tucked the ball under his chubby arm and took off in a sprint, scanning the sideline for me and my approval. When he found me laughing, he gave a tiny celebration of fist pumping, confidently playing the wrong game completely. I thanked God I wasn't the coach and beamed with something akin to pride. Blaze had all of me when he rode his big wheel down the stairs at 3. I heard the commotion. I asked for verification that he did in fact give his best Evel Knievel impersonation, and then I stared at him agape. He shrugged his shoulders and said he made it down just fine. With horror, awe, and a dash of admiration, I shook my head and wondered how in the world that kid got a big wheel up the stairs. I mean, of course he wrote it down then, but how did he get it up there? Amelia had all of me when she insulted the responsorial psalmist at 4. The singer was taking her seat after singing the prayer, and Amelia leaned in close to me, her wet lips brushing my ear in a church whisper, which is, of course, no whisper at all. She bellowed cheerfully, "Welp, at least she'd tried her best." Amused, but my cheeks aflame nonetheless, I sunk deep into the pew with what must have been a mixed message smile as I begged her for the love of David to shh. Rin had all of me when she helped herself to my makeup bag on the daily at 5. She was mesmerized by all the ways to look older or fancier or like someone else entirely. With concentration, she placed lipstick on her eyelids, concealer on her lips, and I would round the corner, and after a moment of shock, I would adjust to the sight, hold her back at arm's length, admire her work, and tell her she was a marvel to behold. Manny had all of me when, with little warning, he quit attempting speech at 6. We taught him to use a device with a voice we hope one day sounds like his. He taps out his needs and asks for his favorite shows. We've been delighted to know that Manny likes peanut butter way more than anyone was appreciating. I learned quickly that there are no certainties when it comes to our kids. They might change a few rules to suit themselves. They might pursue thrills and try to defy death. They might say exactly what's on their mind. They might experiment with who they want to be. They might turn inward and shut others out. When they were little, I cheered and coached and taught and modeled, and there was joy and strife and then more joy, and they pushed me to my furthest edges, and then they pulled me right back in. I spent time dispensing goldfish. I hung out in a baby pool. I found the perfect princess dresses at resale shops and countless acorns in my laundry baskets. And I prayed and I prayed and I prayed that sacrificing my body, my time, and my talent was enough to grow these little people into truly good adults. Good instruction and uncontainable love, that would be enough, right? I couldn't give anything perfectly, but I could give it all, right? All of me would be enough, right? I turned the corner on my morning walk and turned the handful of acorns over in my pocket. Instead of making a second lap, I turned right on a new path, confusing the dogs. I pulled them my direction as they tried to head home the way they knew. I considered the seasons, and I wondered what was required of me now that the kids were in such different stages. Stages where bending the rules, or seeking thrills, or speaking their minds, or redefining themselves, or drawing inward, all of the sudden didn't seem quite so harmless, and certainly less cute. I took a deep breath and asked God how to appreciate the season I was in without pining for where I've already been. My mind wandered back to Australia. When the kids were little and we lived out in the country, we built a fence around our house so the kids could play and we could relax, knowing that there was no way for them to wander too far off. The idea, of course, that walls or firm boundaries would keep them all reined in. The last day of construction, my husband and I walked out to admire the hard work of our friend who built the fence, and Seth smiled a sly smile and asked me, How long you think we have before Blaze figures out how to scale this thing? We laughed and gave him a year. Soon after, he rode a bike down a flight of stairs, so we adjusted our answers and took new bets. And that's just it, isn't it? Fences work. Until they don't. People are going to climb fences, especially if those people are named Blaze. My kids are going to search their boundaries and push their limits. They're going to test and stretch and scale. How could I ever effectively rein them in? How can I keep them from wandering too far off? How will I ever ensure that they don't ruin their lives? I'm in a new season with new answers. I fumbled with the acorns in my pocket and I realized I can't. I can't. And helpless is a hard place to be. I tightened my grip on the dog's leashes, and I wondered if the reasons I pine for former seasons have less to do with nostalgia and more to do with some false sense of control. Of course, I have never had control, I scolded myself out loud. You just had anxiety, I said, which caused the dogs to look back and wonder if they were in trouble. I walked faster with more urgency, grasping the reality of this new season, and I realized the surrender required would be impossible for me. Impossible if it weren't for Australian cattle farmers. Because even though I can't keep my kids from ruining their lives, I was reminded what I can do. I can dig really inviting and welcoming watering holes that run deep with things that are good and pure and life-giving. Good instruction, uncontainable love, mercy. Grace. My older kids are taking charge of their own lives. They're asserting their independence and they're swearing that they know better ways. And my prayers in this new season will be the same but different. I will pray and pray and pray that the wells we've dug over the years, wells of open communication, sincere respect, hearty encouragement, gentleness, self-sacrifice, and God's love, that they are enough to draw them home one day should they ever run off too far. My kids are going to wander off, and when they do, they're going to need mercy. It's critical, really. The watering holes will be the mercy they need when they've gotten lost and yearned for home. And this is the season I'm in. I'm not building fences anymore. I'm digging wells. Fences or wells? Which is harder? Who knows? When the kids were little, I was exhausted and outnumbered. I suppose I'm still outnumbered, but I'm getting more sleep, and that's no small thing. I felt like I gave up a lot when they were little, but at the end of the day, I made peace with the sacrifices. I searched for new balances, and I felt certain that it was worth it. Even though it wasn't perfect, I knew I was doing a good job. And now that the kids are older, they might not have every cell of my body or brain or every second of my time, but if it's possible, those physical sacrifices have been replaced with emotional ones. Their victories and defeats, friend dramas and breakups, invitations and exclusions affect me deeply. Because these invisible lines, they are the strongest. I don't quite have the confidence I used to because I recognize better that control and certainty, they're myths. I have no idea if I'm doing a good job or not, and it feels like only time will tell. And in this way, even though I didn't see it coming, my kids have as much of me as they ever did. The popping acorns under my feet snapped me out of my prayers, and I realized I couldn't be certain I knew where I was. I stood still and got my bearings. I took a deep breath and smiled at my mom's cautioning. I don't know if this makes you feel better or worse, hon, but this kind of love doesn't check with you first. I loosened my grip on the dog's leashes and tossed my pocket full of acorns back where they belonged. I took in a deep breath with intention and sincerity, appreciating that seasons change, and I started down a new road home, and I hoped that all of me was enough.
Hello, Chip Layton of The Layton Show. I am so happy to have you. Thank you for coming on. Thank you for saying yes.
Well, thank you for having me.
This is a delight. You have become an internet sensation. And for the most part, your work, it's silly, right? I mean, it might provoke a laugh or maybe an eye roll, maybe an I told you so. But I would like to offer that it does much more than that, actually, because being in a family, it's hard, and cohabitating is hard. And here are these people that we are contractually obligated to love. But sometimes, you know, how they chew or how they drive or how they make the bed in the morning, it might make us want to call. Yes, breathing can go sideways, and it can make us want to call the whole thing off. And there's something about being able to laugh about what's driving us crazy that makes it drive us less crazy, right? Like laughter in general is so important. It feels like this relational glue that can hold us together when things kind of start to go awry. And I don't know that this is like, I'm not very sciencey, so I don't know that this is scientific, but I don't know that you can be mad and laugh at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Probably, yeah.
So what your videos do is what I'm trying to say, Trip. What your videos do is they allow us to bring something irritating. They allow us to bring it up in a playful way, right?
Or someone
irritating. Yeah, or someone. And then they also allow us to realize that, like, see, I'm not the only one.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, dear husband, I am not a vicious nag that, you know, that hyper focuses on your breathing. There are other people like out there like me. So what you give us relatable things, Chip, you give us relatable things that make us not want to harm the people that we love the very, very most. You're a conversation starter, and I'm so excited about this conversation.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate those kind words. I'm a big fan of yours. Maybe we'll talk about that later, you captured really my thoughts exactly. Actually, I'm a huge believer in the power of laughter, and it has the ability to defuse situations and be a stress reliever if used well, especially when you can direct it to yourself, on yourself. And the reason that I do this and keep doing it is, you know, when I get a note from someone that's like, oh, I had a long day and you made me laugh or smile, or like, hey, I thought I was like the worst parent in the world. And now I see I'm actually totally normal and my kids are normal. So thank you for letting me know that or whatever. Right. And so my whole thing is I feel like we spend so much time on what divides us. And so just trying to bring people together to laugh about the silly stuff every day in everyday life. So thank
you. Gosh, isn't that wonderful that something so simple can reach so deeply? It's so great. Before we get into like TikTok and just how wild this all is, right? Because I would imagine it's unexpected. Yeah. So before we get into all of that, will you introduce yourself by telling us a little bit about who and what you love?
Yeah, sure. So I'm Chip Layton of The Layton Show on social media. And I love my family. So I'm married and I have two kids, 20 and 16. And they bring me all kinds of joy in life. And we have lots of laughs, and that's great. And I would say laughter is the other thing I love. I mean, I love lots of things, but I think that's just a big part of life. And just, it makes life more fun and interesting. And it's something that everybody, I think, enjoys.
Okay. So I didn't know that I was going to ask you this, but it's fun to have you face to face. It's fun to see you in person, because there's the part of your videos is you're just there, you know, presenting the information. Like, you know, we don't get a lot of your personhood. So how would you describe your personality?
Yeah. I mean, I'm actually like a big introvert. I don't I love spending time by myself. I love spending time with my family as well.
Yeah.
But I'm not like, people ask like, oh, were you like the class clown or whatever? Definitely not.
Yeah.
And so there's something about this platform that appeals to me, because I can like create something like by myself in my living room or whatever.
Yeah. And
then, I mean, yes, it could be seen by hundreds of thousands of people or whatever, which is bizarre. I can't get my head around it, but
totally.
But I'm pretty low key and mellow. I think that's partially why I'm able to, I think, you know, laugh stuff off, you know, when things come up in the family or whatever. But yeah.
Okay. So before we get into how this blew up on the internet, for people who might not know, I can't imagine who you would be, but for people who might not know, can you explain what you've been doing and what people have been latching onto?
Yeah. I mean, I started just posting some stuff initially on TikTok, like family stuff. My channel is called The Layton Show, and it's mostly either like husband and wife kind of humor or having teenagers humor. And so like some of my bigger, you know, themes have been, I do these lists of things I've apologized to my wife for, which are these like sarcastic things, like, you know, I ruined the couch by sitting on it, you know, that kind of thing, you know, because your body indents that cushion. And, you know, now if I want to watch TV, I just like to stand. Or, you know, things I apologize to my teenagers for. I do a lot of that. Like a good example there would be like the other day, the smoothie I made was too cold. So it's that kind of feedback that I get. So I do a lot of that. Over time, one of the big things I do is text. It started out as texts from my teenagers, like inspirational texts of just silly stuff. But now all kinds of other parents like send me theirs, and I use those in my posts. So it's
so great.
Yeah. So it's yeah, it's a teenager and marriage kind of humor and some other kind of random stuff. But I've been, yeah, doing that for, I guess it's like 2.5 years now, but that's, yeah, that's what it is.
We can get into more examples of the hilarity for sure. But my favorite category has been questions from teens that have from college freshmen, the questions from college freshmen. Now that's a good time. Do you have one off the top of your head that is especially wild?
Oh, there's a lot. It started out like I did a post from, when our son was a freshman last year in college, I posted some stuff about that and got some reactions, but then people started sending me stuff and it's like, there's so many questions. I mean, a lot of them are in like the dumb question category, which is like, can I get lung cancer from smoked turkey? You know, that kind of thing. can I use a Christmas stamp to mail something in July? You know, it's they're not actually dumb questions. They're just stuff that like, you wouldn't know that if nobody had ever explained it. So it's stuff you realize, oh, I forgot to explain that or whatever. And then there's a whole other category that's just like, teenagers just like, being cruel to their parents or whatever, just like criticizing what they wear or giving them instructions on like how not to embarrass them. Like that's the whole other theme is like, hey, you can pick me up now. Just park where no one can see you. It's like, you got to be visible when you have a teenager, but that's a little more of the high school thing. But
yes, lots of sports spectating things too. Yeah. Like this is just a great time. If you are married, if you have children, this is, it's oddly refreshing because you could perceive it another way. In the internet, this can happen with the internet. So I'll tell you just a quick story of something that my husband and I thought would be funny that people did not think was funny. But I'm laughing about you saying, oh, we have this couch, but I can't use it as a couch. So I have the dish towel.
Oh, yeah. That's a big one.
It's decorative. Okay. Right, yeah. So we think that it would be funny. My husband and I think that it would be funny to like have this little mock argument where why did you put up, I'm glad you did it. Don't get me wrong. But why of all the dish towels that are stacked here, why did you pick the Christmas one to put over the oven rack? Because it's July. Not like Christmas. Why? I'm just curious the thought process. And he was like, red and green is not specifically festive. And then I say, now you know what the word festive means. Because I asked you to dress the kids festively for the Christmas program last year, and you put them in neon. And so, and he was like, and I got a lot of compliments. And I'm like, babe, people felt bad for you. Okay, so anyways, so then I say, so he was like, red and green is not specific to Christmas. And I'm like, name one other time. And he goes, Mexico. And so anyways, okay, so that's the scale. Yeah. When I tell you that this found, and I know you can imagine, we've been there. We've done this together, I'm sure. But when this found the wrong side of TikTok, we don't just have people calling for our divorce. We have people lining up to be this poor man's wife. So anyways, before we get into all the ways the internet can surprise us, will you tell us a little bit about how your TikTok journey started? What in the world? Did you have any idea?
Yeah, I mean, I just started I guess it was early 21. I just started using TikTok. Just me and my daughter, I think, were the first ones in the family to just, because we thought it was a fun platform that's like mostly positive and just like, it's just about laughing and smiling. And I think there's something amazing about these platforms because someone with no following or no background or whatever can just based on how engaging their post is reach thousands or even millions of people. And there's never been anything like that in the history of the world. Right. You think about the ability of creative people to reach others. It's amazing. I like humor. So I was like, I wonder if I could, make something that's funny that, 5,000 people like see and laugh at or whatever. And I tried stuff for like the first 6 months. I was like, the stuff I did was terrible. I was going for like weird instead of relatable. And, it just didn't work. And after 6 months I had 17 followers and I was thinking about deleting the account actually. Cause I was like, I guess this didn't really work out the way I was thinking. And it was like around July 4th. And I was on vacation. We saw my sister-in-law and she was like, oh, you haven't posted anything in a while. And I was like, it gave me an idea for something I wanted to do. And I posted it a couple of days later and it was like the last day of vacation and we had to check out of the house the next day. I posted that night, and then I was like, I wanted to get like quick. We were on a lake. I wanted to get a quick kayak in before we left. So I was like out in my kayak. I had like a fishing rod out, and like my daughter starts texting me. She's like, "Your post, it's going viral. It's got like 50,000 views and this many likes." And I was like, "What? What's going on?" And then a couple weeks later, I had another one do that, and kind of on and on. And I don't have a ton of skills in life, but one of my skills is like I'm able to like improve at stuff and sort of figure out what's working and what's not.
Yeah,
Like almost every sports award I've ever won is like most improved player. So I've been able to figure out like over time like what works and find my audience and that kind of thing. And it's crazy because I was like, after the first two or three, I was like, I think I might be able to get to like 10,000 followers, which is like a big deal on TikTok because you qualify for the creator fund then where they could pay you a little bit. And it's just, I used to think about like, oh man, those are like big time creators that have like, you know, thousands of followers. And of course my family's like, you know, skeptical the whole time and give me feedback. Like
they're heckling you.
10,000 and you never get to 50,000. It all started innocently enough and here we are.
Yeah. Okay. Well, what were the weird things that weren't working? I feel like everybody, you know, loves a success story.
I mean, they're probably like too hard to describe, but they're just like, I don't know. They're just like, I haven't looked back in a while. Most of them I've scrubbed from the page, but it's like,
I'll do that for you, friend.
Right. I figured out at one point you could make them private and then like nobody would see them, but you wouldn't actually delete them.
So I
started doing that, but it was just like, the key was like, it wasn't relatable. And that's what I sort of figured out. It's got to be relatable and also kind of the bullseye is if it's relatable, but also kind of surprising. You know, and it's like, oh, I hadn't thought of that, but it's exactly my experience kind of a thing. Yeah.
Right. So, okay. To go back a little bit, I have found that a lot of times it can be something happening in the comments. So for example, so relatability, if you can produce something that makes a lot of people say, me too, me too, me too, or here's my example of that, which is exactly what you're doing.
Yeah.
And this is always an accident for us because we're not pot stirrers. Like I want to hug the pot and nurture the pot. And like, I don't want to stir the pot. But actually in my normal life, I do. In my real life, I do, but I don't publicly. So if you start an argument in the comments, so people start arguing, has a video ever gone south for you? Has that happened?
Yeah, I mean, well, there's one I posted that was just like it was the wrong tone. But what happened early on, like the second thing I posted that went viral was like text from my teenage daughter, and it was all about like, you know, make me pancakes, do it, you know, like just bossing me around, food, and it was great. A lot of people loved it, but there was also like all these people in the comments, like, oh, you know, giving me like advice on how to parent and like, this is rude or whatever. And then like other parents coming back, like, oh, you don't understand teenagers. And so that, I mean, the algorithm does, I think, reward that kind of conflict.
Right.
I've seen that less and less over time. I mean, I did.
Yeah, like, me too.
Yeah. I think you kind of find your audience and they help you find your audience. And, I think, as I've expanded it to like other people's, you know, teenage text messages, it has a little bit different vibe. The husband and wife stuff does get a little closer to the edge. And I have early on, I did get some stuff around, you know, people are like, they don't really get that it's, you know, sarcasm or whatever. And the thing I always remember is in the fall of 2022, I started to get some media coverage, and it all started with this article in the Daily Mail in the UK, which is like this sort of tabloid around things I apologize to my wife for. And like the comment section was like, ridiculous. I mean, everyone's like, you know, attacking my wife and saying like, why you need a divorce and all this stuff. And it's like, because people are reading it completely out of context. And it's like, this is on TikTok. Like, this is how this is how you talk and laugh and stuff. And so the more you get removed from the right environment or the right audience, people start to like see it a different way. But like I said, I see that less and less over time. I do occasionally block someone, not to be punitive, but just like my whole idea is to like to bring something positive to someone's day. So if they're like,
right,
this humor's not for them, I don't want it going to them because I don't want to annoy them. Right. So
yeah,
it's that
nice.
Kind of thing.
You know? That's nice of you to say. But it's true. If something is triggering to someone, because we've had two videos kind of go viral for the wrong reasons. And we've been doing this since 2020. So that feels like a pretty good track record. But it was kind of that unintentional engagement, you know? And you're right that the algorithm starts to engagement is engagement. You know, it's a robot, yeah. right? So it's like they're like, oh, this is doing great. And it's like, cut it off.
Yeah.
You know, but and what I have found is that there are a lot of people that use the platform that are using it differently. So like, I remember one comment of mine for a long time was, I think you just take your TikTok more seriously than I do. And that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But it's like, yeah. we're just probably not the place
yeah.
for you. So what, I mean, we talked about relatability, but when, because I do think that there are deeper things happening here with the people that we love the most. Mm. What do you, and you can't deny the numbers. Like there are crazy amounts of people that are posting and reposting this. Like you've been able to cross platforms. Like not only are you huge on TikTok, but you're an Instagram sensation too, which I've never been able to do. I'd love to pick your brain.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. But you know, across platforms, people are going, yes, this, what is it that people are latching onto? What's happening?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question. I do think it's, you know, if you think about the comment section, it's like this community's kind of sprung up of like people, like if you take the teenage stuff, it's like, you know, again, I think I might've said it earlier, but it's like, oh, I thought it was just my kid that did that. And then you realize it's like totally common and like they're, it normalizes it. I've literally had like family therapists like reach out to me and say like, oh, I send your posts to my clients and it really helps them to know that like they're not alone and like they're actually a good parent. And so there's kind of this like group therapy thing that goes on. And I think the comment section is like, it's key. Cause like if I do a teenage text message post or whatever, people will put their, you know, funny teenage text message. And so people like look forward maybe as much to the comment section as the post itself.
Yes,
and so that
right,
creates
right.
this, kind of, yeah, this community, which is cool. You know, I mean, I'm not trying to sound like I'm tooting my own horn here, but like I've always tried to like focus on quality over quantity. So like Same. You talk to these, you know, social media experts, so like you got to post every day, you know, 3 times a day, 6 times a day. I'm like, I like barely pull together 2 a week.
No.
But but if they're good, they're good. And I actually think there's good data behind it, because I know like what a great post will do for me. And then I know what a good post will do, and the great post will do like 20 times what a good one does. And so
it's true.
It's better to like put it all into one really good one that's going to go far. So yeah.
Yeah. We have the exact same philosophy, mostly because I create content with a teenager. And so I've had to be really thoughtful about that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
If this were bad for our relationship, we would have quit yesterday.
Yeah,
and, yeah. And so it has to be something that stays bonding and that stays fun. And so if there's an idea that he's not into, we don't do it. If there's a day that he's not in the mood to do something, we don't do it, you know? Yeah. And so not to mention that creativity has its own rhythms. And if we were going to try to do some, what, I don't know, even know what they say, but like 3 times a day, it would be crap. It would just be crap. Yeah. And so I really agree with your philosophy, and the numbers seem to support it.
Yeah. It might be different. Like when you're first starting out, I could see it's a little different when you're just trying to get in front of people. And,
right.
But like once you kind of find your audience and your rhythm, I think it's better to have people kind of looking forward to your posts rather than like getting bored of them.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. Yeah. The satiating your people where they're tired of you.
Like, yeah.
So what I really like, and I feel like we try to do as well, is we will have an idea or like maybe a series, and then we will have a new idea or a new series, and then maybe we'll come back to this series, and then people will be like, oh yeah, I loved that. So, and I feel like you have done the same. I don't know if it's intentional or not, or just, you know, how the wind blows. But one of the things, when you first caught my attention, I think that it was around apologizing to my wife.
Yeah, I'm sure.
And so I sent you a comment, I think, or I not sent you a comment. I left a comment that said, oh my gosh, I just got mad at my husband because like a bug flew in my face in the doorway, like getting into the house, a bug flew in my face and he like didn't protect me or something. It was like, I can't explain it. What my brain did was there's a bug in my face and I'm mad at you.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
And so one of my favorite things that you do is you will provide, this is what your husband should have done.
Oh yeah. 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 I'm not sure. And he probably in that case, he should have like dove in front, you know, and at like lightning speed in front of the bug to make sure it didn't make contact with your face.
Yes. But yes, he should have seen that coming way off.
Yeah, absolutely. No. Yeah. I try to give, that was like the I did a couple of apologies to my wife that like went hugely viral, like late 2021 and led to a lot of growth. And yeah, I try to do like a little like, hey, here's what I should have done. Like one of them is one time I sprained my ankle. I had one of those walking boots and I was limping too loudly up the stairs. So, you know,
yeah.
What you got to do there is you got to lay down on the good leg and then just silently drag your body up the stairs. So that's the answer. So it's just simple, common sense kind of solution.
There's like an army crawl involved.
Yeah, just quietly though.
Yeah. Okay, I'll give you one more. And so I think I commented this as well. I was putting on my makeup in the car and he hit a bump.
Oh,
so yeah, so yeah, I know. It's horrible. What was he thinking? So what should he have done, Chip?
Well, you got to map the route out ahead of time. And then you got to go scan it for any potholes or any bumps in the road. And then you got to redo the route to make sure that you're not going to hit anything. You know, it's especially if, it was makeup in your case. Like in my case, it's like I did one around, like I applied the brakes in order to save our lives. But it caused her to like spill some of the coffee that she was drinking out of a regular kitchen mug, you know, that kind of thing. Obviously that was, you know, that's my bad.
Yeah, it is definitely your bad. So, okay. And so if you have apologizing to your wife, we also have teen inspiration.
Yeah.
Okay. Lots of teen inspiration. And so we have beautiful scenery. We have lullaby music, lots of good feelings happening. And then what kind of texts?
Well, yeah, they started out, I think I called them inspirational texts. Now I just call them sort of like teenager texts or texts from your college freshman. But yeah, I mean, it started with like my daughter bossing me around, like asking for food or maybe commenting on my appearance. Like, you know, one of them was like, I came downstairs one day. It was like, you look like you slept in a dumpster. It's like, they're not all texts. Some of them are like quotes, but there's just a whole variety of like when kids get in situations for the first time and like the seemingly dumb questions they ask, like I do a whole thing around I just wrote a book which we could talk about, which comes out later this year,
but I
do a whole thing in there around like when kids have to fill out forms for the first time and like what they write down. So it's like
this one girl
was at the doctor and it asked for her name and address and it asked for her street name. She put down her nickname. It's like, I don't know what they're really looking for.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, there's a whole bunch of boys who like texted like one of their parents, hey, I'm filling out this form. What's my maiden name? It's like, all right, I guess we didn't cover that one.
Yeah.
You know, it's that kind of stuff.
I mean, to be fair, you're not born knowing this.
No. That's my point. Like you wouldn't know.
Okay, last genre, if you can give us a couple of examples. Okay, so we have apologies, we have inspiration, embarrassments, Chip. Lots of embarrassing material walking around being a parent.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, yeah, I think I've done this series on, or still doing it on things I don't recommend if you have teenagers, right? Like just basic, you know, kind of stuff. And it's like, like rolling down your window or you know, things that basically like a teenager's favorite phrase is like, you know, nobody does that. Like that's so weird, whatever. So it's like
just you, super cringe. Yeah.
Like saying yes if someone asks you if you want a receipt, you know, it's like the rudest thing in the world. You know, the kids will like apologize for you if you ask for a receipt or I learned the other day, like inserting your payment card instead of tapping it is like super lame. But then somebody told me like, oh, around here you can't even tap it. You got to use your phone. You can't be using a card or whatever. So it's like you got to be invisible if you have teenagers. Other than like, as long as you can like, you know, fund their DoorDash, you know, deliveries or whatever.
Sure. Well, so well-seasoned parents like ourselves, Chip, with maybe some, you know, rascally personality types. Okay. Silas told me the other day that if I wanted this contact from him, I just needed to like hover my phone over his phone. And I was like, I know what you're doing. You're making fun of me because I'm about to like hover my phone over your phone and then you're going to laugh at me. You're going to make fun of me. And he's like, I got to go. I give up. So apparently like that is a real thing, but I thought I was one step ahead, man.
Yeah. That's good. Being paranoid. Yeah. Yeah. Technology. There's all kinds of technology.
Oh yeah. No, you're going to get me there.
Yeah.
You were saying something about you'll do it better, but you were talking about cheering and don't stand up. Don't
Oh yeah,
I think there was like some sports spectating is a whole could be a genre itself.
Right. There's instruction basically like you could, what I posted the other day, somebody said to me was like, you can come to the game, but don't stand when the cheerleaders say stand up. I've had someone say like they got trouble because they their kid when they were doing the wave at some stadium, the kid's like, don't stand up when the wave comes to us.
It's just hilarious. It's so great. Yeah. Okay, so Chip, what does this look like for you? I think you mentioned off air quitting a corporate job. You just touched on having written a book. What's going on? Where are you taking this?
Yeah. Yeah, it's been crazy. I mean, I don't know exactly. I at one point along the way, I just decided I was going to kind of like default to saying yes when, opportunities presented themselves. Yeah. I think what I decided that was when this guy from Cameo like was trying to recruit me to go on the platform pretty early on. And I'm like, that's so ridiculous. Like no one's going to pay to have me like say happy birthday or whatever to them. But then I was like, you know what, when else is somebody going to ask me to do that? And
right,
I was thinking, and I was thinking like, well, I could do my own spin on that. Like, you know, I do all these apologies, you know, to my wife. And like, so my whole genre there is usually like, you know, a husband, like asking me to help apologize for stupid things, or a wife giving their husband feedback through me. And I get great feedback on those. So it's actually really fun. So anyway, that's like an example of like, I was like, all right, let's go for it and do this thing. So I've just been trying to like grow it over time. And so I've worked in the corporate world for, 25 plus years. And I started this while I was working there and just kind of tried to keep growing it. And I was always kind of looking for an off ramp from the corporate world and I didn't want to work like full time there forever. Mm-hmm. And so I kind of built this and I knew that I wouldn't ever be able to do everything I wanted with this while I was still working full time. Like I wanted to write a book and maybe start a podcast. I'd love to get your advice on that and do some other things. And so I left my job last year and I almost call it like a semi-retirement or whatever, but it gives me more time to focus on this. And I had, worked hard and saved a lot of money. And so I'm really fortunate to be in this position, but it let me kind of focus a lot on writing the book. Last fall, I did some stand up, which is a whole other angle on this last summer, which was fun. So it gave me time to like pull together an act and we'll kind of see where it goes. Yeah.
Gosh, that's exciting. Stand up is terrifying to me.
Yeah.
Because I feel like I mean, fill me in every other endeavor, there's either going to be praise or rejection, like adoration or rejection, or then something in between. Like, so if that's the spectrum, stand up, it's like the fear is nothing. You know what I mean? So it's like you try your best and then nothing. And there is something just so terrifying about that to me. Yeah. What has been your experience with stand up?
Well, so I always sort of thought like the type of stuff I do could work well, like live on stage. You think, apologies to my wife or whatever, but like, who am I? How am I going to do that? Like, I'm not going to go like tour like these little tidy comedy clubs. Like, that's not my life or whatever. And then like last spring, so Caroline Ray, who does stand up, and a lot of people know her from Sabrina the Teenage Witch, the TV show, like, she reached out to me and she's like, oh, you're hilarious. I actually live in Maine in the summer, which I didn't know. I live in Maine. Mm-hmm. She's like, do you do stand up? Would you want to do some shows together? And I was like, I would love to. I don't do any stand up. She's like, oh, I'm a great teacher. I can coach you over Zoom or whatever. And it was like the perfect scenario, right? Because it's like, I don't even have to travel for it. And like, I've got like a big name stand up to do it with and to help coach me. And there's a chance to like try it out and see like, A, am I any good at it? And B, do I like it? And so I had a chance, we did a couple of shows and it actually went, so I had to kind of like pull together a set pretty quickly, but I had kind of been thinking about it and how my stuff would translate. And it actually went really well. I got great feedback. And so I'm trying to figure out like, what's the path for that? I kind of turned to the book last fall, but I'm kind of turning back and saying, okay, what's the path there? I do get people sort of asking like, hey, are you going to be, touring or whatever? And so I don't know. I mean, I did maybe 15 minutes and so I'm trying to think about what a longer piece looks like, but it was, I mean, in my corporate job, I mean, I spent some time like on stage in front of people. So I wasn't that wasn't totally new to me, but it's, but it's different. I mean, it's probably similar with you, like my demographics, a little bit older than you'd find in like, at like an open mic or whatever. I did like an open mic to get ready for this. And it's like, 20 something that are, drinking and half paying attention. And it's like, it's, that's not the right setting, but like, if you reach your audience, like it's great, you know? So yeah.
Sure. Oh, that's so exciting. Okay. And are you allowed to tell us, I mean, tell me to mind my own business at any point, but your writing endeavor, publishing a book, what is that about?
Yeah. So it's about teenagers. It's a humor book. So it's full of all these like texts from teenagers and funny quotes and texts and stories, and includes, you know, some stories from my own family. I've got a bunch of like silly, like charts and graphs about teenagers in there. I have a bunch of like quizzes and things. So I'm really happy with how it came together.
I think you're
going to love it. Yeah. I think it's a good, like sort of gift, you know, light, you know, gift kind of book. And yeah, it comes out this fall. And so I'll be, you know, I think formally announcing that in another, we're recording this in March, and another month or two, I'll probably be formally announcing that.
Okay.
But it's not a secret or anything, but
sure.
But yeah, so that was totally new, just like everything else in this journey. And yeah, we'll see how it goes. Yeah.
That is so exciting. I will gladly yell about that when the time is right, and you're welcome back anytime.
Awesome.
Please ask. You have an open invitation. Please ask.
I appreciate it. Yeah. So yeah.
Okay. So lots of unexpected creative opportunities, maybe even career routes. When you think about, you know, the type of life you want to live, you know, like this, we are in the second half, are we not? Like,
that's a generous way to put it, at least in my case. Yeah. But if I live to be, well, whatever.
But we have a healthy realization just of how important these relationships are. Mm. And then to not quite take ourselves so seriously, you know? Mm. So I feel like there's a lot of things happening with your account at the same time. That's just, you know, kind of touching on all these realizations people our age are having. Mm. If you could, and I know neither one of us are experts, but if you could give some advice about, you know, secrets of a healthy marriage, what would you have to say?
Oh, marriage. Yeah. I mean,
because yeah, as it turns out, y'all actually really do have a good time and love each other and all that.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. I always try to point this out earlier than I have now, but happily married 24 years.
Yes.
I'm incredibly lucky. And,
aside from all the breathing.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. She's a great check on my ego. You know, she's like, when I was getting ready to do stand up for the first time, she was like, just focus 95% of your energy on preparing for hecklers, because that's the work that's going to pay off for you.
So. Yeah, yeah.
But anyway, I mean, I guess I would say a couple of things. I mean, one is, you know, be patient about finding the right person, right? Like I'm always kind of like a little bit slow to act because I want to make sure. And I know that doesn't help you if you're already married and maybe it's not the right person or whatever, but like, there's no rush, right? Like I probably got feedback like, when are you going to propose? Like, you've been dating for whatever, 4 years or whatever. And it's like, what's the downside to waiting? You know, you'll only, if she's the right person for you, you'll only become more sure, you know, over time. And if for some reason, you know, that isn't the right person for you, you want to know now, right? And when you're younger, you change a lot over time. And so,
right.
There's no rush, as they take your time. But then, you know, in terms of marriage itself, I mean, I'm sure I said it before, I guess, but I really think laughter is an important tool, because you're going to be in these situations that are kind of absurd. I mean, certainly the way I present them online, I try to make them as absurd as possible. Because I'm trying to make a point that, like, you know, if you are, you know, if your wife is mad that you're standing in front of the kitchen drawer that she wants to open, like, that, like, there's a little, that's kind of ridiculous, right? And yet, like, she really is kind of pissed because you're getting in her way and there's more going on. And like, and so, like, whatever.
It's ridiculous, but real.
Right. And so I post stuff like that. It's like the guys are like, thank you. Hello. That's my life. And the women are like, oh my gosh, tell me about that. Like, how annoying is that? It's like, everybody thinks it's with that apology stuff, it's not clear who the object and subject of the joke are.
Actually, we're all justified.
People. Right. Yeah. But anyway, I like when something like that happens, like you can sort of argue about it or get worked up about it, or you can kind of like laugh at it or laugh at yourself. And like,
right.
If you can, everybody's going to have those moments. And so like, it's about how you deal with them. And I might've said it earlier, but I'm pretty low key kind of personality wise. Mm-hmm. And my wife's pretty low key personality too. So that it probably helps with that. But
yeah.
I think you just got to laugh and keep it in perspective and like, just not take stuff too seriously.
Yeah. I have the first episode of this season was Dr. Eve Rodsky, and she does a lot of work around like home equity. And it's brilliant because she literally gamified a really tense conversation. So if we're going to, if a husband and a wife are going to sit down and talk about who does what, it's like, why would we have that conversation? Because that's just a fight waiting to happen. I mean, there's a lot of resentment. There's a lot of defensiveness around that topic. But if you can gamify it with like a set of cards, and then really it just becomes something that needs to be done anyway. It's like a lighthearted conversation about something that's going to help us live more harmoniously. And so if you have like these, you know, ridiculous scenarios that actually make us feel real feelings, and if we can talk about it in a funny way, I mean, what a healer, you know? And in addition to ridiculousness, life is going to actually get hard. Like inevitably our parents are going to pass away. Our kids are going to leave home. Like there are real heartaches, and there's, if I were to give advice about healthy marriage, people laugh at me because it's silly, but it's like, find something you really, really love to do together, even if it's just a TV show, because when life gets hard, or when you're in kind of this gridlock of like silence, you know, or tension, you can do this. You can resort, you can fall back on this thing that you enjoy together, and it just kind of loosens something locked where it's like, now we can talk about these characters and not about us, you know? And then eventually things can just lighten up enough to maybe go back and have the real conversation. But I just think that there's a lot of wisdom in what you're doing and how you're approaching it.
Well, that's a good tip too. I like that. the other thing you made me think of is like a quote I've always liked. It's like, you don't have to attend every argument you're invited to, kind of a thing. Like some people will like just take the bait at every situation and look to amplify stuff. And that's just not my personality or whatever, but you can't like hide everything or whatever, but I don't know. I think about that too.
I think getting beneath that, and it's like, is there an addiction to some like drama, you know, like what's beneath my tendency to do that?
Right.
Okay. So similarly, teenagers, dun, dun, dun. You know, I thought when people said that parenting teenagers was hard, I thought that they meant like hard cute, like hard, like hard in a sitcom kind of way, you know, where it's like, and here I am, you know, in the middle of it. And it's like, oh, it's really hard. Like it's actually hard. And there are times where I like have to actually remember that biologically speaking, their brains are not finished. So if I were to look at them and say, what were you thinking? Their real honest answer might legitimately be, I don't know.
Yeah. Or I wasn't.
I wasn't. Yeah. So what is some of your advice about a healthy relationship with your teen?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I'm super lucky in that regard too. My kids are great kids. Like I've, you know, they're, I mean, normal teenage stuff, but like they're good kids. And so for me, it's about like, you know, I know it's all fleeting and trying to take advantage of, you know, the time that we have. My basic advice or philosophy is I don't think kids pay a lot of attention to what you tell them or what you say. I think they pay way more attention to what you do. And so, and you spend so much time around your kids as they're growing up that they know who you are, right? Like you can't fake it and like, you know, posture around, you know, this is the behavior I'm trying to model or whatever. Like they know who you are. So I think the best thing you could do is focus yourself on being a good person. And if you do that, like odds are your kids are going to be good people too. So that's, maybe that's too simple or too easy, but that's kind of how I think.
So good. Yeah. It's really good. I was thinking about, I know that there's a way to talk in a way that our kids will listen. And I know that there's a way to listen that our kids will talk. I believe that's possible, but so much of it requires a discipline from me. So like if a kid were to come to me with something, which by the way, is never convenient or planned. It's like the times that they choose to open up are always, you know, spontaneous and inconvenient. And then how much of that is just being available? You know, being open to, okay, this isn't how I planned it would go. But in those moments of openness or vulnerability from my teenager, trying not to use every single moment as a teaching opportunity. Sometimes you can just receive. Sometimes, you know, I might even like specifically ask, is this a time that you just want me to listen or do you want my input? Do you want my advice? Yeah. And a lot of times the answer is no, just a good listen would feel really good right now. You know, yeah. So I think that there's an ironically, maybe there's an open-handedness that kind of creates the most connection.
Yeah. Yeah. I heard a quote once. It was about, like, you know, spending time in the car with kids, which is a lot of the time you spend at a certain age, right?
Yeah.
It's like, I think the kid was like getting, you know, whatever. The parent was like trying to make conversation, right? The kid was basically like, you know, sometimes I just like being with you and like not talking, you know, like that's true. I think of most kids most of the time, right? It's like, that's actually kind of quality time. And so I tend to, I'm not a huge talker anyway, but I try to just enjoy the time and, you know, sometimes little stuff will come up or whatever, but like, you know, asking teenagers about their day or about school, like it rarely goes anywhere interesting. I mean, kids are different. So I'm
sure. Kids, yeah. I think generally speaking, you're good. Yeah.
So I think, like you said, being available and just being present. And if your kids feel comfortable coming to you at times for stuff, that's awesome.
Yeah. 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 One of the things that I was thinking with marriage, and I don't know, it seems like an oversimplification, but just enjoying something together is really thinking about how to get into the things your kids are into. I think there's a lot of validation in that. I think it shows a lot of respect and I don't know, kindness, even a generosity maybe. But I was watching this. You and I don't need to be sold on the value of TikTok, but I know that other people our age do, you know, are still kind of like, that's a trashy dancing app for whatever.
Kids, yeah.
Yeah. And so, but I was, and I don't know if it was a TikTok or whatever, but I don't know how I saw the video, but the video was of a teenager who had like slipped into her mom's bed. Okay. So they're both like in bed together next to each other. And the teenager is flipping through her phone. She's scrolling through TikTok. She's watching TikToks next to her mom. And her mom starts to make a TikTok or a video or something and is filming her and is like, if you're just going to sit here on your phone next to me, why are you even here? And it was like, what a missed opportunity to just be near. Like how many teenagers are crawling into their parents' bed? And, you know, I mean, so anyways, I think that there's something to being into what your kids are into. And it might require, you know, some real openness when it comes to their music or, you know, a new hobby or a video game or whatever. I mean, I don't know. But, you know, just being a little more open-minded to what the kids are doing these days.
Yeah. Even being fascinated by it, right? It's like, you know, I think that's good. And like I said earlier, like that's how I started on TikTok with my daughter and I just kind of looking at it, you know, next to each other, you know, on our phones or whatever. So it's, like I think parents a lot of times get like so worked up about like doing everything right and, you know, having teachable moments or whatever. And, you know, but I think it's more just about being there. And like I said, being a good person and, you know, who knows? I don't know how my kids will turn out when they're like fully grown adults, but so far so good.
Good. Okay. So to end, what is something that you're hopeful for, Chip?
I'm hopeful that, you know, like I think I said earlier, like I think we spend so much time on like what divides us and like you know, what I try to bring about is just some positive moments where we laugh together. Like I'm hopeful that, you know, we'll have more of that right in the future. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I know people get stressed about stuff. We've got an election this year. People are going to be stressed about. And just, I hope that, that more of that kind of positive, you know, common kind of stuff happens. And and I hope to continue to get the opportunity to do this kind of thing in the ways I'm doing it today and maybe some different ways in the future. And so I'm hopeful for that. And I guess that's what I'd say.
Where do we follow along? How do we support your work? Tell us, give us some marching orders, Chip.
All right. Thank you. So it's the account's called The Leighton Show. It's LEIGHTON. That's what it's called on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook. I have a website. It's theleightonshow.com, which you can go to. I've got like a curated selection of videos there and some other stuff. So it's a good place to start if you don't know me. And a book coming out this fall. It's called What Time Is Noon, which is like a common like question teenagers ask. If you tell them like, you know, hey, we're leaving at noon, they're like, when you say noon, is that 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock? Mm-hmm. You know, anyway, the book, I'll be, you know, shouting about the book plenty, this coming year, but that's where people can find me.
That is something I am hopeful for. I am hopeful that your stand-up takes off, that your book sells millions of copies. This is so exciting. It's so fun to follow along. I'm a real true fan because I feel that there is something about wholesome content through a family lens, which is just what this world needs. We might feel powerless against all the hate in the world, and there's something about what you're doing that lets us know that that's not true. And so I'm really, really grateful to host you today. I hope to host you in the future, and I will be cheering along wildly as you do all the things you do. Thanks for coming on.
Well, thank you so much. It was really fun to get to meet you and to talk, and hopefully we'll get the chance to talk more in the future.
Perfect, Chip. Thank you. See ya. Hello, Beefinator. Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Beefy Beef.
Okay, so I think that this is a guest that you knew without me having to introduce you.
Certainly.
I think maybe you have sent me his stuff.
Uh-huh.
Just a rip-roaring good time. His little hot takes on raising teenagers and taking... what is refreshingly a very common experience,
yes,
being annoyed with our husbands, laughing / making fun of our teenagers.
Yes.
I mean, it's such a great little corner of the internet he's created.
Yes. And he's got such a good vibe, right? Like the way that he's like low key, right? It makes it like way funnier. Just the
totally
way that he presents the information as well.
Totally.
He's awesome.
His facial expressions,
yes,
the tone of his voice, like
yes,
everything, it's all perfect.
Yes.
Okay, so I was thinking about his little series.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have an example? What is the dumbest reason that you've ever been mad at Mike? And if you need time to think, I may or may not have one.
No, it's okay. So what's interesting about what he helps me do is that, because obviously when you're mad, you don't think it's dumb, right? But then when he exposes you to other people's stuff and you're like, oh yeah, I've done that and that was dumb. So that's helpful. But okay, so I accuse Mike. I don't accuse Mike. Mike is often inappropriately standing about. And so sometimes what he should be doing is just leaving, because the baby screaming at the top of her lungs at bath time is just better to handle alone. And so he just should,
yeah,
less standing and more walking away.
Uh-huh.
But sometimes, admittedly, it would be jumping in. Right? Why are you standing and looking? You need to be doing. So it's just really inappropriate standing and not knowing which one of those two opposite things he is absolutely certainly supposed to be doing in that moment.
Mm-hmm. This is very well said. This is very well said. And I can guarantee you that there are women like pumping their fists right now. Okay, this just became its own meme.
Yeah,
like they are sending this along, Beef. Well done, well done. I had this, so we're only children, right? Well, I had this moment when I was newly married where I realized that, you know, like we're in bed together, okay? And his alarm clock goes off and he hits snooze.
Oh my goodness.
And I'm like, oh, so part of being married is having to contend with someone else's snooze habits? Now, hold on a minute. We need to conference. We need to problem solve. This isn't going to be okay.
That's a good one. I never in my life, probably to this date, have pushed a snooze button. And he does. He does like a snooze.
Yeah. Okay. Is there any ridiculous reason that you have embarrassed your teens when you were just existing, living life,
right,
and did not deserve their ridicule and judgment?
I mean, the one that is most often is just inappropriately speaking to others, just really engaging with other humans.
Okay.
At, you know, like a checker at the grocery store, like asking them how they are, or just trying to be polite sometimes is, not sometimes, most of the time is very cringe. I get a lot of, why mom, why?
Yeah.
They don't want to talk to you.
Mm.
I think they do. I think they do.
I do.
And I think I'm really just getting started, right? Like we all know that old people like to talk to everybody all the time. And so this is just the beginning and it can't be stopped. I try maybe to be a little bit more aware of it around the teen, but not so much. It's not really one that I can respect.
Yeah.
How about you?
I support that.
Yeah.
For me, it's really kind of the sign of a good day, and I'm as introverted as they come, but like it will be considered a good day if I've had just a little chit chat with the mailman or the whoever, you know?
Uh-huh.
they'll learn. They'll figure it out. So yeah. I horrified my child. I thought I was going to get a big W for this. I showed up. It was before a football game. And mm-hmm. but they're, you know, it, they have to wait for like the other teams to play. And so it's long. Mm-hmm. And so I was going to bring, you know, you, I think you can get 20 cheeseburgers at McDonald's for like $20.
Yeah.
So I was like,
Zero.
Yeah. And so I'm going to give these cheeseburgers to my son to then him be a hero.
Yeah.
Hey guys. Okay.
You are welcome.
You would have thought that I was a mass murderer and that, I mean, so he is horrified that this is absolutely not happening. And I'm like, well, see, I just spent $40 on cheeseburgers. Yeah, so I don't know how to tell you this. And he, it was one of those times where he was like, we can start thinking of the punishments, but like,
oh, wow. It's
not happening.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, well, gosh, I think it was that first time of parenting where I was like, and what now?
Yeah, exactly.
So anyways, wow. I leave with the cheeseburgers, parenting win, parenting miss. I don't know, whatever. I have mm-hmm. these cheeseburgers in my car. I see a group of kids. One group of kids, they're walking home and I'm like, hey guys, anyways, so because school's out, like everybody's walking home.
Oh my gosh.
I become a hero somewhere else.
Cheeseburger lady, for sure.
Yes. That's awesome. So you want to please some other kids? I can tell you exactly what to do. You want to horrify your own? I got you too.
Cheeseburgers, buckets of cheeseburgers.
Okay. I want one more. Do you have one of being super embarrassed by your own parents when you were our kids' age?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll go first if you need to think. Yeah. Okay. So I had a boyfriend over for like one of the first times. You know how in late 80s, early 90s, our dads, when they mowed the yard, they wore like these tennis shorts and tube socks?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I will protect the innocent with the name. Uh-huh. Okay. Schneider. Yes. Is sitting on my couch. My dad walks in through the garage door. I take one look at him and I'm like, oh no, oh no, oh no. I leap from the couch. I'm like a flying squirrel. Okay. I leap at him. I take both hands. I put them around his shins and I shove his socks down.
Oh, so, I thought you were about to decant them. I was like, what? Seems like you were going to make it first. Got it.
So I shove his socks down to a respectable height and my dad is just baffled at what just happened. All he did was walk through the door. And the next thing he knows, he is practically in a wrestling match with his daughter.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. I would love for your dad to make a guest appearance and tell that story in his words. Yeah. that would be hilarious.
Yeah.
Okay. So the first one that comes to mind for me is not as dramatic, but it was, I can remember how it smelled. Like it was that embarrassing that I can pull that back right now. It was the beginning of high school and we were at like an outdoor concert and a boy, Brad, that I was like dating, but I guess it was still kind of early or new or something. And we ran into some of my parents' friends and my mom introduced him as my boyfriend. And I wasn't sure, I'm sweating right now. I wasn't sure if that's what it was or if, and I can remember just saying like, why are you talking? Like, why would you say words? Like your words are dangerous. Like you can't control your words. You don't know the nonsense that's about to come out of your mouth. I can't protect you fast enough. Right? I couldn't jump in front of that word. I can just remember being like so furious that you would speak about me to someone else in front of me in introduction.
Right. With wrong titles, nonetheless.
Oh, yeah. So bad.
Feels a little justified beef. All right. This was fun. Love you.
Love you. Bye.
I am so, so grateful for you, listener. If you liked this episode, could you please do me a favor and hit subscribe and leave a review? It really helps the show grow, and I would be so appreciative. Thank you so much to our guests who share their gifts so generously with us, and a special thank you to Taylor Schroll, who does so much behind the scenes to make the show great. If it weren't for him, I would still be in my closet with my iPhone. You can follow along at Forte Catholic as well. That's Taylor's show where I show up now and again. And to keep up more regularly, please follow along on Instagram at Allison M. Sully or TikTok at Sullivan Family TikTok. See you next week.
Today's show was a production of Allison Sullivan in conjunction with the Forte Catholic Podcast Network. For more great Catholic podcasts, head on over to fortecatholic.com/podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts.